I didn't promise anybody anything. What do I know about Hollywood anyway? Just the dreams I got from sitting through the gun double features.
Hello, everyone, and welcome to Movie Flex Double Features. Movie Flex, the only podcast smart enough to know that if Ingmar Bergman was a young man today, he would be making movies only with juggalos. I am Steven, a.k.a. at Estebs, joined as I am every week by the one and only, the incomparable Matt, a.k.a. at Posting Pro. Matt, talk to America.
Yo, what's up, America?
Yeah, we need healthcare, motherfucker. No, I'm just kidding. Yeah, but I'm stoked to get to our guest this week. I know every week people are like, oh, he keeps saying it gets better and better. Yeah, because we designed the schedule so that every week we would outdo ourselves. So it's kind of the plan. And yeah, I've been really stoked to have tonight's guest on. He's got, you know, we're a podcast, a movie podcast that was founded on vibes. And he's got amazing vibes. Immaculate, the best, some would say. Ladies and gentlemen, everyone, you know him, you love him. It's Lobster 2000. What's up, Lob?
Hey, how's it going, folks? Thanks for the vibe compliment.
Yeah, I was always like, oh, yeah, you know, I've known you for like maybe close to a year or something like that, 6 months to a year, but I always enjoy your, like, once every few months, I'll be like, hey, did you see this toy? And you'll be like, yeah. And it's the simplest relationship. It's very not uncomplicated, and I appreciate it very much.
Very pure.
Exactly, yeah. People wouldn't realize that. They wouldn't realize how pure most of the homies are. In the DMs, most of us, you know, because, you know, the only ones that are getting famous are the bad boys, the naughty, naughty boys. But speaking of naughty boys, you bought us a great, great double feature tonight of many quite naughty men, very naughty outlaws. But yeah, a couple of Westerns from the year of 1969. Nice. But yeah. Tonight's films, The Wild Bunch and Butch Cassidy and the Sundance Kid. Law, why don't you tell us a little bit about these films and why you picked them as tonight's double feature, and maybe what you would title the double feature. I'm going to be honest, like, no matter what you say, I'm going to name the episode like something with 69 in it, you know, because I mean, I just have to, you know, it's cheap, but I would kick myself if I didn't, you know.
Fair enough. I've always kind of been fascinated by these two movies because they're such different takes on like basically the exact same subject matter and story, and they came out in the same year. And I've always just thought that was a really interesting sort of like they're really interesting counterparts to each other. And I saw Butch and Sundance when I was really young, because it's one of my dad's favorites. But I didn't see The Wild Bunch until I got into Westerns a few years ago. And they're like two of my favorite Westerns. So I just thought it'd be cool to talk about them in comparison to each other.
Cool. Yeah, these are two of my favorite Westerns as well. I'm a huge Western head. So yeah, spoiler alert, I had a fucking amazing time. But with that said, let's get in our first film, 1969's The Wild Bunch, directed by Sam Peckinpah. The cast is just like a who's who of like guys, you know. You got William Holden, obviously, from Sunset Boulevard. You got Ernest Borgnine himself, Dutch. Warren Oates, who is amazing in Bring Me the Head of Alfredo Garcia. I think most people will probably know him, I think, as whatever the army rank is, from Stripes or whatever. But yeah, a bunch of... he's in Stripes, right?
Yeah, he's like Sergeant Polka, I think.
Okay, yeah, I was like, oh, it's like, isn't that Steve Martin? But yeah, whatever. Yeah, we'll get in the Sergeant Bilko extended universe. But yeah, no, also shout out to Peckinpah. He gets bonus points for me. A lot of these from the majority, yeah, I mean, from what I can see, they're all the Mexican characters are actually played by Mexicans. A lot of these guys are actually famous writer directors, like the guy who plays Mapache. But yeah, love this movie. It's 5 stars for me. Second time I watched it, or maybe third, but yeah, something like that. But yeah, Lob, why don't you give us your first thoughts, and then Matt.
This is a 5-star for me too. I think I've watched it. This is either my third or fourth time. I watched this pretty, I got into Westerns in like 2019, I think, because of Red Dead Redemption 2, which is, you know, pretty, I mean, that's probably cool. Like, yeah, the most like basic way you could get into Westerns today, but you know, it worked. And this is like probably the biggest influence as a movie on those games. So it was like, I'm going to check this one out soon. And yeah, it's really, Peckinpah is one of my favorite directors in general now. And this is, my favorite from him is either this or Alfredo Garcia. They're both really good.
Yeah, no, he's definitely got the sauce. I always cite him when I say that, you know, when I was a kid in the 90s, I grew up wanting to be a director because I knew that back in the day, there were guys like Sam Peckinpah who could like, you know, they wake up in the morning and just like immediately get drunk and they like point guns at their actors on set. And, you know, they just make like the most complicated, like no CGI, like fucking action set pieces. Yeah, but yeah, Matt, what do you think?
Yeah, so for this one, I haven't ever seen this movie before until this double feature. I liked it. It was a four for me. I think it doesn't get that. I think it gets the four because of the characters. I feel like I didn't really have such a strong connection with any of the characters, and I'm a big character guy. So
these characters are actually, they're a lot like my life, like what these guys go through.
Yeah, I was telling Matt, like, this movie might have my favorite last line of any movie, where he's like, it ain't like the old days, but it'll do, or something like that.
Yeah.
Man, that just kind of sums up the whole movie. It's like, for me, I told Matt, like, I mean, that totally makes sense. I mean, like, yeah, anything above a four is, like, personal taste anyway. But yeah, Deke Thornton, yeah. Like, that character to me felt like Peckinpah. Like, there's that scene where he tells the guys, like, you know, the men up ahead, those are men, and I wish I was with them, but I'm with you, Egg suckers, by the way. That's a very, like, Texas insult, because, like, in Spanish, like when you, in English, when you say testicles, you say balls, but in Spanish, you say huevos, which literally means eggs. So, like, calling someone an egg sucker, it means you suck nuts or whatever, testiculars, you know? But yeah, so very dirty language, but I love that. And then at the end, it just looks like he kind of is looking around Hollywood, because he's very old at this point. I told Matt, his movie is also kind of nihilistic, but it kind of makes it, I forget it, and it like makes sense for the time, because it's the end of the 60s, it's the end of this golden age of Westerns, and it feels like Peckinpah, you know, is a very old man at this point. He's kind of looking around at him, he's like, you know, all the old timers are gone, like most of my friends are dead probably at this point. You know, he probably feels like he's the last real man alive, right? He probably feels just like Deke, you know, like it ain't like the good old days, but it'll do, you know, kind of what many men feel as they get older. You know, I feel like that's kind of every guy feels that every generation, you know?
Yeah, I think I'm sure a lot of people have said this, but I think Paul Schrader a year or two back said that, like, this is like the last Western. Like,
yeah,
it's the end. I mean, it's not literally, obviously, but like, it's the end of an era of movies.
For sure. Yeah. And like I said, a lot of the beginning, that whole action sequence, I think it's kind of deceptively simple, because it's like, I think you watch and be like, oh yeah, a bunch of people just did that and filmed it. And you're like, no, they had to like keep redoing it. And then they had to set up a shot and be like, okay, at what point in the action are we, you know what I mean? Like, there's so much coordinating and stuff and like hard work that goes behind the scenes of like capturing the simplest stuff. And again, these guys have been doing it, you know, Peckinpah have been doing it forever at this point, 30, 40 years or whatever. So it's old hat to him, but to me, it's super impressive, right? Because it's not like, oh, we'll just get like the medium, the wide, and the close, and, you know, just do it in post, and, you know, like all green screen and shit. It's like, no, we have to make sure like the sun's in the same place so that the fucking, you know, the light looks the same. It's really impressive to me.
Yeah, that opening set piece is amazing, or like such a cool way to open the movie. And like, you know, it's, seeing it today, it's like, you know, it's a really cool set piece, but like at the time, especially compared to like the, you know, previous Westerns, it is like, it's, there's so many squibs going off, it's, there's so much blood, and like they're shooting, like they're taking old ladies hostage and stuff, like it's nasty.
Yeah, because if you watched like a lot of old Westerns, especially from like the 50s, when they shoot each other, like there's no blood, there's no like actual wound, it's just like oh, they shoot him and the guy like clutches and goes down. But they do that with gangster movies too. If you watch gangster movies from like the 40s and 50s. But this is right at that era of like New Hollywood, right? So like, Matt, I know you're a fan of the Bonnie and Clyde movie, right?
Yeah, I love Bonnie and Clyde.
Yeah, so Bonnie and Clyde was 67. That's a couple years before this. So even though Sam Peckinpah is an old guy, I feel like he kind of adapts to the new, quote-unquote, new Hollywood shit, right?
Yeah. It's kind of interesting. I know we'll get into this later, but it's kind of interesting to me in style, like, comparing this to... because I watched this with my dad a couple years ago, and he remarked on this, too. Like, Butch and Sundance feels so much more like kind of like a new Hollywood film, whereas this is, like...
Mm-hmm.
Like, I feel like if you showed these two movies to a modern viewer, they would, like, probably, you know, most people would probably, like, gravitate to Butch and Sundance because it just feels so much more modern. And I don't mean that as a slight on the Wild Bunch at all, but it's so much more, like, this, like, you know, elegy for...
Yeah.
Yeah.
The elegy for old guys, like, the death of something, right? Doesn't it?
Yeah.
I mean, this movie does feel, like, very, like... something is dying, right? Like watching something die, or like sort of like a eulogy, I guess.
Yeah, absolutely.
Yeah, like their way of life, right? Is like part of the it's like part of that movie. Like all the guys are getting old, and the gang is just like having to deal with this like transition, right? It's like you said, Lob very much like a kind of Red Dead Redemption is very similar to this type of story, right? Like the West is dying, and it's like, you know, that brand of outlaws like obviously going away. It's like this, it's like you said, it's like this kind of moving on, kind of like something new is coming, but for something new to come, it, you know, something old's got to die.
It definitely feels like I said, like a eulogy. Like I was looking, this was like a few years before John Ford would die, and then because he died. His last movie, well, there was a documentary he made for the Marine Corps in 1970, but like his last movie was in 66. So yeah, this was like right after the John Ford movie. Yeah, so I was curious about that because I feel like he's one of those guys. Like Peckinpah probably sees like him, John Ford, John Huston, probably Bogart. He probably sees them all as like the last cowboys, and like half of those guys are fucking either dead or dying by now. You know, like they all died at like 32 from smoking cigarettes or whatever. they're real cowboys, man, legit. You know.
I think William Holden would die pretty soon after this too. Like he's and he looks like way older here than he did, like, you know, just a few years beforehand. He looks like a piece of like granite in this movie.
But yeah, he's specifically a very haggard William Holden, because he does not look like the man from Sunset Boulevard at all.
No, I think I think originally Lee Marvin was like supposed to get cast, and there was a conflict or something, but like in the Holden role. And I think Holden is really great in this, but I am really curious about what that would have been like.
That is very interesting. Yeah. But yeah, no, Wild Bunch. Like you said, very violent. I remember that was like kind of the reputation this movie had. Basically, we should say, if you haven't seen it, it's pretty long. It's like 2.5 hours. So I would consider it kind of an epic. But like, basically, there's this. The Wild Bunch, you know, a gang of posse of outlaws, and they're led by William Holden. There's a couple of brothers. There's Ernest Borgnine. There's the Latino Angel Angel, and they're being pursued by, you know, bounty hunters, right? Or
bounty hunters under the railroad company hired them. Yep.
Yeah, so it's just like guys hired by the railroad company, pretty similar to the second film. And yeah, so, and the guy who's like leading the hunt is like kind of old friends with William Holden's character, who's the leader of the outlaws, and they sort of betrayed, you know, or they used to be outlaws together, and then they sort of had a falling out, so to speak. And yeah, they have a history, and yeah, it's interesting, like you said, I know Red Dead 2, like, I played it too. Like, it straight up steals, yeah, like, a lot of, like, the whole storyline about, like, you know, like going to like fight for the guerrillas or whatever, the revolutionaries and the federales. Yeah, like the yeah, if you've ever played Red Dead, this should be extremely like familiar to you, right?
Yeah, and I'd be pretty sure. I mean, it's definitely not a coincidence that Ernest Borgnine's character is named Dutch here.
Oh yeah, for sure. Yeah.
Nice.
Yeah, and then Robert Ryan, I should say, is Deke Thornton. Yeah, so Deke is the Deke and Pike. Pike is William Holden's character. Deke and Pike, they're the old guys. They have like history, and I guess on Matt, like there's one scene at the beginning that like I feel like it hit harder watching it the second time, because like there's a scene at the beginning where like Pike is talking to this old Mexican man in a village, and like he's kind of like baffled to see two of his men, kind of the brothers or whatever, kind of like acting like kids and chasing this girl around, you know, and kind of like in puppy dog love or whatever, right? And then it's such a contrast to like at the end, there's that scene where the same guys are like arguing with a sex worker and like trying to cheat, like, you know, probably trying to rip her off or something, and they're like, whatever, just it's a very ugly scene, and it's such a contrast, because in the first scene, I think the Mexican guy tells him like, yeah, no, everyone, even like the hardest men, like no one forgets what it's like to be a child, or no one wants to forget or whatever. And then like to contrast that with at the end, now they're just like kind of petty and fighting over like money, and like they want to like shortchange this girl. Like, yeah, it's like Holden doesn't, Pike doesn't say anything, but you can just see it in his eyes, you know? There's a close-up where he's just, like, looking at them. Fucking says everything you need to know, you know?
It's really kind of a sense of, like even the Gorch brothers, I think, even though they're, like, part of the, you know, kind of dying cowboys, that, you know, they're the next generation down from, like, Pike and Dutch. Mm-hmm. And, like, there's kind of a sense that, like, the generations are like getting more and more like they're getting nastier. Like you see how those guys, you know, like they treat women and stuff compared to not that Pike is like a great guy, but then like you see the kids at the start too, where they're like, you know, they have the ants fighting the scorpions and then they set them all on fire and stuff. Like there's kind of the sense that like, you know, the future is not bright, and this is like what year is this set in? Like it's pretty close before World War One would start, I think.
1890s, I think, because that's when
I think
1913.
Yeah, oh, because one of them has a 1911 pistol, I think.
Yeah. Oh yeah, you're right. Yeah, Butch Cassidy and Sundance is set in the 1890s.
Okay.
But yeah, I wanted to comment on that. Actually, I'm glad that you brought that up, Lob. Like the kids burning they're throwing the scorpions in the ant pit and watching them fight, and then they burn them all, and they're laughing and playing and stuff. And I thought that was very indicative of like the entire movie, because it's like very much like we're saying, it's this kind of transitionary period, but also it's like literally we are watching kind of like the scorpions fight the ants, right? They're all like bad predatory guys, like the gang that we're seeing are outlaws, but they're also like just as like the bounty hunters, and then later on like the federales and stuff are just as bad, right? They're just as bad men, but they have like the law on their sides. But it's like, you know, it's kind of like this commentary where you see the kids laughing and you're just like, oh, okay. Like even these kids are used to like mindless cruelty and this like harsh world. But then like, what's the only way to like get the scorpions and the ants to stop fighting, which is just burn it all down. Right. It's like a very bleak, nihilistic kind of look at the future of like, you know, the world.
Yeah. It's a brilliant like visual that just like, it's a metaphor for the whole film, kind of summed up in one visual. Like, it's brilliant. It's, you know, yeah, it should be studied more.
I just thought that was, like I said, it was very indicative of like the entire, because the entire movie is just like, you know, it's kind of like there's no good people in the movie. You know what I mean? Like they're all like hard people because the world's made them hard. You know.
Yeah, it's moral complexity. It's gray areas. It's very ahead of its time. You know, it's like kind of like you could draw a straight line from like this to, I would say, not only like Deadwood and No Country for Old Men, but like even something like Game of Thrones. You know, it's like a much more morally complex look at, you know, a classic genre, right? Where like generally we see the heroes and villains, the good guys and bad guys, but we know in real life that's not how things are, you know. But yeah, so I think that's what I kind of appreciate about this movie. It's kind of, you know, pioneering in that way. I mean, it's not probably like, definitely not like the first film, I would say, to, you know, 69. There were films before this that, you know, were commentaries on Westerns. And then you get spaghetti Westerns, which are literal parodies of, like, you know, Westerns or whatever. But yeah, Lob, do you like, have you gotten into like spaghetti Westerns at all? Or what about you, Matt? Are you, I don't know if I've ever asked you about like Clint Eastwood's like No Name trilogy.
Go ahead.
Sure. Thanks. I'm by no means an expert, but I watched a bunch of them when I kind of got into Westerns. I watched, the No Name ones, the original Django, and then just kind of, I think Cemetery Without Crosses is really under discussed. That's a great Western.
I have that on my watch list, actually. I've heard the same thing. That was when I was like, oh man, I've never heard of it, but it sounds amazing.
It's just like even more so than this movie, I think, just like incredibly hopeless and nasty, but it's like, it's got a really really bopping Scott Walker theme song, which is cool. But it's a beautiful movie, but really unpleasant vibes. But yeah, I've seen, you know, I'm definitely not an expert on the genre in general or spaghetti Westerns, but I've seen a bunch of them.
We are not experts. We merely play them on podcast. right Matt.
Yeah, exactly. For spaghetti Westerns, yeah, I've seen like the No Name trilogy. I love the No Name trilogy. And I've seen Django. I've seen others. I think I've seen other spaghetti Westerns. I'm not 100% sure other than those four that right off the top of my head. But like the No Name trilogy is so like such like a forefront in my mind, like all the time, that like literally today I was watching Butch Cassidy, right, for the double feature. And I like every time I watch a Western, I just think of the score, and I'll just like sit there and whistle, like if no one's around, I sit there and go to and then I'll go, wah, wah, wah. I think of that score all the time. So like,
it's amazing.
Yeah. Probably some of the best movie music ever.
Oh yeah, definitely.
So yeah, I do have a familiarity with them.
Peckinpah's like, oh, you Italian guys want to parody Westerns? I'll kill Westerns. I'll be the most fucked up nihilistic guy. And like I said, it works because this is 69, right? Like, this is the end of the 60s. This is fucking Manson and shit. And, you know, everyone's checking out, bro. You know, oh, we're all MKUltra. We're all going to be boomers. And, you know, we're all going to watch, in 10 years, we're all going to be watching The Big Chill and working at Apple or, whatever. I don't know what boomers theory did. I'm not gonna guess.
There's a really good, I don't know what year it was. He talks about the Wild Bunch or a lot, I should say, in it. But there's a really good Playboy interview with Peckinpah around this time where he talks about the Wild Bunch and stuff, but they kind of ask him about like his views in general on life, and he's just kind of like, you know, like, he has no faith in like any political system or anything. He's just like, oh, Jesus Christ, they got like, I think he says about Nixon, like, you know, Nixon, and you know, they're like walking around with death in their eyes and stuff. And he has like no faith in like that anything is ever going to get better. And that really comes through in this movie.
50 years ahead of his time, you know, calling conservatives a death cult and being like, there's no hope for the future later. Based Matt, we're going to say, I was gonna ask you, like, what did you think of like the action sequence? Because I know like Peckinpah was really big about his midpoint action sequence. He had to have a big, you know, and in this one it's the big train robbery, and it's very silent, but you know, again, like I love that. I love no dialogue, you know. I love visuals and, you know, and it's it, like I said, I think the fact that I've seen this already is kind of like, I definitely the first time kind of struggled with it a bit more.
I think that's the biggest thing is like when you have, because like you have this idea of like the Western genre, mm-hmm. right? Like, so when you watch like something like this, or, you know, like Unforgiven is also one that kind of springs to mind when it's kind of like Eastwood wrestling with like his own legacy and everything. Mm. But when you have like this movie that's kind of like a, it's a text like about like a genre, right? It's about like kind of this nihilistic tilt or this, you know, this death of this genre or whatever. And you, mm-hmm. you have it, I find to get me invested in it, you have to give me someone or something to care about, like mm-hmm. in terms of like someone or something to root for. And I know that's not the point. Like, I know that's actually the exact point is that there's no one really, right? But like talking about the action sequences, like I was kind of saying, like I wasn't digging the movie when I was watching it mm-hmm. the first time, because I'm very much like, I need someone or something to latch on to.
Sure.
Right. Like, and it's not even
an emotional center. Yeah, that's fine.
It's not even that I need to root for them, like morally or anything. I just need I just need to like care. And so the entire time I'm watching, like, I just didn't care. Right.
You need like an emotional center to like gravitate to. Right.
Yeah. Just something
that's totally understandable. Yeah.
Something in the story, you know, to kind of like do that. But yeah, like you were saying, the battle sequences. I was gonna say, like, you know, it feels like a really long runtime when I was watching it, you know. But the ending sequence made me completely forget that I sat there for 2.5 hours, right? Because that's how fun it was, and I was like, oh, this is a very incredible. And it, you know, it ends in like a very nihilistic way, but it's also kind of like, this is all we got. So, you know what? It's good a thing as any, right? So it's like, okay, that like, it really ended on a high point for me. But yeah, like I said, I wasn't clicking. That's why I gave it 4. I know a lot of, I know a lot of mutuals gave it 5, but like, that's what I was saying. It was like a 3 until the ending for me.
No. I mean, that makes sense. I mean, at the end, you know, he's still with his boys. Like I said, I enjoyed it much more the second time. What about you, Lop?
Yeah, I think the first time I saw this, I gave it this was a few years ago, and that was, these days I don't like to do the 4.5 first viewing, and I'll probably give it a 5 the second. Like, I just, like, I feel like I should just give it the 5 if I'm going to do that. But I do, it definitely is like, especially in contrast to Butch and Sundance, which is like so like watchable and like, so smooth. It is like a dry, dusty movie, and like most of the guys in it are like, you know, I can totally see not emotionally connecting with the guys.
You're like, I was like, oh, you know, Lob's gonna come on the pod, he's gonna inject some like youthful Gen Z, you know, energy. And then, yeah, man, but I respect it even more. This is even better, you know.
I think, there's something, I don't know if I can put this into words perfectly, but like, Peckinpah specifically, and like the whole kind of like the westerns that are like the, you know, the end of the West, where it's kind of, there's not really a place for you anymore. Like when I used to, my, you know, photos I do and stuff, I used to do a lot of cowboy ones. I really was like enamored with that sense of like trying to capture, like, you know, just like the sense that you don't, like,
Lob, where's the horizon line?
Just like the sense that the world is like, you know, kind of passed you by, or that you're like, you know, there's just something really like melancholy and compelling about that to me. And like Peckinpah specifically is like, you know, I mean, it would probably be a nightmare to like know him personally, but he's such a compelling and like interesting artist to me, and like really inspirational, like as a, you know, quote unquote artist myself, like just like this guy who was just kind of putting like his total deal up on the screen, like, you know, all his issues in, you know, just putting like himself, especially in Alfredo Garcia, this ugly self up on the screen and being like, yeah, this is me. And like, you know, like, fuck you. Like, he's just sorry, go ahead.
No, I was going to say, like, he literally taught you that it was okay to be weird.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah, he's just like, I gotta finish it sometime, but I have a book of like all the interviews he did in his life or something, and he's like just a super compelling Yeah, and he just, I mean, very flawed individual, obviously, but but he is an interesting, like, he really just called it like he saw it. There's a great quote in the Playboy interview where somebody asked him about The Godfather. So I guess this must have been a few years after Wild Bunch. And he's like, oh, did you see that? And he's like, no, I don't want to see that because I heard it's a great movie and I don't want anyone making great fucking movies but me. Like, just says what he wants.
That's awesome.
No, I totally agree. Dude. I love watching, like, yeah, clips of his interviews and stuff. Like, I think there's a Dick Cavett interview. Oh, man. Dick Cavett's had some fucking bangers. But yeah, no, he's like you're saying, like, he's an extremely fascinating person, deeply flawed, but, like, they let him cook, you know? And, like, that's cool. Like, that was a good country, you know?
There's really an interesting, interesting parallel, I feel, to a lot of, especially later Clint's and, like, Unforgiven, but also, like, The Mule and stuff, where, like, his characters are, like, so obviously stand-ins for himself and, like, the, like, self-loathing he has, especially for his, like, failures as a, you know, like, you know, The Mule and stuff. There's a lot of stuff about Clint being a father and stuff that's, like, really interesting in a, like, self-reflexive way. And, like, especially Alfredo Garcia, I think, like, Warren Oates was literally wearing some of Sam's real clothes and stuff. Like, that's always really interesting to me when an artist is, like, so self-critical in their,
Yeah, no, we just did Richard Jewell, and I was like, oh, Clint Eastwood got two self-insert characters. Because I feel like his dark side is the John Hamm character, and his light side is the Sam Rockwell character. Like, those are the two sides of Clint. Yeah, I mean, that's me. They're both.
That is actually a Clint blind spot for me. I got to see Richard Julia.
Oh yeah, no, it was my first time seeing it. It's amazing. You love you. Yeah. We watched that in Observe and Report, and I'm happy to report that I observed two great movies that night.
Yeah. This is if Cha Cha Real Smooth director Cooper Rafe is listening right now. If he's listening to this, the lesson he needs to learn is you need to stop making yourself insert characters, the goofiest boy that everybody loves in the world. Okay, you need to make him a real piece of shit. Then we'll like you.
Yeah. Make him a fucked up guy.
Yeah.
Matt, what's better than a movie about a fucked up guy?
Absolutely nothing. As Joker 2019 proved. You know?
oh, you know what? What about a fucked up guy, but, like, he's a woman, but she's, like, hot, you know?
Lydia Tarr.
Yeah. Oh, okay. Yeah, best movie of the fucking year. I'm sorry, man. I feel like I haven't even rewatched it. I've just thought about Tar a lot. Lob, you're here. You should talk about Tar. Matt loves it. And I haven't even I'm going to rewatch it, but just the more I think about it, I'm like, man, that ending, dude. Oh, my God. You tweeted about it, Matt, but it is genuinely fucking hilarious. Like, oh, my God. So good.
I really talk love about, Tar, too, yeah.
Talk about death of an era, huh? Lydia Tarr is over.
No country for Lydia Tarr.
Yeah. You know what I really love about the Wild Bunch, though? How fucked up Ernest Borgnine looks. He's just a fucked up little guy.
He's always looked like that.
Yeah, he's going to live for another, like, 60 years or something.
Yeah.
No, not that long. That's way too long. Like, maybe 40 years, something like that. But he wasn't even, like, that old here.
No, he was 23.
Different time, you know.
They do not make guys like that anymore.
Yeah. I don't know what's going on with the Timothy Chalamet, but Ernest Borgnine's coming for you.
Ernest Borgnine looked exactly like Timothy Chalamet when he was in. No, it's crazy. I just want to say this. He lived until 2012. Like, he saw Barack Obama, dude. Like, he saw, like, most of. Did he see, like, all of Mad Men? Maybe.
Yeah. Let's get his.
Could have watched Michael Bay Transformers, probably.
Yeah. Let's get his thought on. Let's get his thought on Revenge of the Fallen.
Go, damn! If I have a time machine, I'm gonna go back to 2012 to interview Ernest Borgnine right before he dies about what are his thoughts on. Yeah,
I think in a lot of ways you could say Dark of the Moon is the modern Wild Bunch, the millennial Wild Bunch.
Basically, yeah, no, pretty much, yeah.
Norton is kind of the Megatron of this picture.
Well, like, I've always thought of, like, I mean, let's address the elephant in the room, so to speak. Euphoria is basically a ripoff of Wild Bunch, right? Like, we all saw that, right? Like,
I never thought about it that way, but you're onto something here.
It's basically one to one, right? I've never seen an episode of Euphoria. I'm just guessing, you know? But it seems right to me. It sounds like something that would be true, you know?
The Wild Bunch is the new Boogie Nights, though.
That is true.
Man, he would live another 43 years after this movie.
Wild.
I think Mel Gibson was, or maybe still is, attached to do a remake of The Wild Bunch. I think a different one with Will Smith, where they were going to be like DEA agents or something, was. But the Mel one is maybe still going to happen. That was going to have, like,
you know what?
We need more Jason Momoa, I think.
Yeah, have Jason
Momoa. I mean,
let's make The Wild Bunch CIA. That'll be cool.
Have John Cena. Who cares?
I guess if if you need a like unhinged modern or a moderate director unhinged enough to do it, like Mel might be the guy.
Oh, Mel would be the guy. You just got to get him back on the sauce, you know.
He's like he makes it like Snyder's Watchmen, right? It's kind of like Nick and Paul's like, yeah, look at this. Like they're all like morally gray. It's so much violence. It's like the death of an era. And Mel Gibson's like, that's awesome. He's like, it's fucking rules. This is like Snyder's Watchmen's just like, yeah, you know what? Rorschach actually does kick ass.
He's like, nah, but what if like. Hear me out. He was like, no, but what if the cop, you know, what if like the bad guys were right, you know?
Hell yeah. We love Mel. Yeah. We love our problematic king, right?
Oh, racist ass Melly Gibson is my shit.
I do not endorse any statements on this. I'm just a guest. I don't endorse any statements about Mel Gibson being a king or whatever.
Yeah. Neither do we.
No. But Lethal Weapon, you know, Mad Max. Not gonna act like he wasn't in, the Road Warrior.
I mean, you gotta, you know, separate the art. I'm told, just like with Lydia Tarr, actually.
Exactly. Yeah. So you're gonna tell me you like Lydia Tarr, but you refuse to watch any of the Lethal Weapon movies? Okay.
I bet Lydia Tarr really learned nothing. Those. Anyway.
Yeah, anyway, guys, final thoughts, I guess, on The Wild Bunch?
Lob, go ahead. Final thoughts.
No, sorry, I will formulate thoughts. Go ahead.
Okay, yeah, I was just going to say, yeah, it's like, it's. I liked it. I think, like, yeah, that ending is incredible. It's such an incredible ending, right? Like, that I think it just kind of, like, elevates the movie. In my mind, and there's kind of like this it's funny because like I was the Western, right? It's like the idea of the Western is like the hero comes in and saves, and then they ride off into the sunset, and then the heroes, right, of the story, quote unquote, they end up all dying and they get their boots picked over and their bodies dragged, go on to like collect, you know, say that they're dead, go to collect the bounty. And the only riding off into the sunset's like, I guess we can go like do some stuff. Like, I guess we'll rob banks and like with these guys. And he's like, yeah, all right, whatever. And then they just kind of like ride off into the whatever, you know?
Yeah. That old guy's like, they invented this new thing called cocaine. They're like, we go down to New Orleans, try it out for ourselves. All right, I guess.
Bob, what about you? Final thoughts?
Yeah, I mean, it's. I was gonna say before, I like that you brought up No Country for Old Men, because I was thinking about during the like last scene, like, you know, I was like, you know, if you were gonna do like a pithy one-liner letterbox review of this, you could just write No Country for Old Men. Yeah. I'm not going to do that. But this is, you know, one of the like titans of the genre for me. It's not really one I would like I'd probably watch it maybe once every year or two, because it is like long and like kind of involved. You really have to like, so it's not like one I'm going to throw on for fun, but it's, yeah, one of my favorite movies and Westerns. It's great.
Yeah, I mean, it's got really cool violence. Got a lot of blood, you know. A lot of people get their fucking heads blown off, and it's not Scanners, but like, I don't know. Like, yeah, like you said, it's very thematically heavy. So I think it maybe is more appreciated upon like further viewing because you kind of understand what you're going into. It, you know, it takes a few times to, you know, to like kind of. You know, kind of break down what's going on. And it takes a lot of like historical knowledge too, and context and stuff, and knowing like who made this. And like I said, you know, I have on like the Shout Factory like app, they have the Dick Cavett show, and he has all these fucking amazing like interviews with directors. And I want to say he has a Sam Peckinpah episode. But yeah, I've definitely like you said, he's just like a fascinating guy, just kind of like putting everything that he believes out in the open, and you know, for better or worse, kind of like pinning his like, you know, like pinning his whole like flag to the whole like violence thing. Like violence is kind of inherent in everything we do as a country, you know. It's kind of like the big payoff, or like everything comes down to, you know, the big shootout or whatever.
Bloody Sam, they called him.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah, he's known for shootouts and stuff. And, you know, people will be like, oh, yeah, it's like, you know, Tarantino. I don't know if Tarantino's like, I mean, I'm sure he's a big fan, but I don't have like his thoughts pulled up in front of me. But yeah, it's like, it's kind of like that. It's kind of like 60s Tarantino. Like, oh, yeah, just like a really bloody, you know, the Wild Bunch, the whole bloody affair, you know? just a lot of guys being dudes as well. You know, like I said, it's just like, ultimately, this is a movie about male friendship, you know? Like,
carry on your thought.
Oh no, you can go ahead. I was just gonna say that there's a prequel to this where it's just five different stories of all of these guys fighting with their wives.
I was gonna say during the big last shootout, there's the scene where Pike goes into that little room where there's the woman, and then there's the like cabinet with the mirror on the door, and he shoots the mirror, which is like a Peckinpah motif, like it's kind of like a self-loathing thing. It pops up in a lot of his movies, but there's a guy in there and he kills him, and then he like sees the woman, he looks at her, but he turns around, and then she shoots him in the back and he turns around and shoots her, and it's kind of the like framing is kind of like a mirrored version of the earlier flashback scene where he's with the woman he loves in the past, and then her husband breaks in and shoots both of them. It's kind of like, it's almost like he's like, and you know, he says he still thinks about her every day and stuff. It's almost like a rejection of like everything she represented or any like chance she might have given him to be like a different sort of man, because like the end of the movie is them like rejecting everything in favor of like the boys, basically. Just like, we're finally living up to our like code of honor that we talk about the whole movie. And that's the only thing, that's the best and like only thing we can do at this point.
It's all the boys from the Twitter group chat meeting up and be like, damn, see, we said that if this, we did this and we just focused on ourselves and the boys, like we wouldn't need women, you know? And we fucking, we did it, bro.
And then we, you know, people are picking over our boots and gold teeth and, you know, 10 minutes later.
Yeah, I mean, like fucking haters, you know? Like straight up. Oh man, I really want to see a TikTok version of the Wild Bunch, though. Like, you can get like Logan Paul. Oh, and we can get the Paul brothers. They'll play the brothers. We'll get Logan Paul and Jake Paul to play the brother parts. The Latino guy, I don't know. We can get it's one of the guys from Euphoria or something. Again, you know, it's kind of the same thing anyway. But yeah,
Mel Gibson, if you're listening, some ideas here.
Yeah, you know, give us Zoomer Wild Bunch. You know, put some, I don't know, who the Timothy Chalamet, hey, you know, you probably look good in a cowboy hat. Think about it. It's money on the table. I want to say really quickly, most Ernest Borgnine heads, you know him from a film called Marty. It was a 1955 romantic comedy. The thing is, it's written by Paddy Chayefsky. The film Marty is actually based on a TV teleplay. It's one of the few, like, back in the day, they would do like live broadcast of like TV shows, and it's one of the few that actually got recorded. So yeah, I'm just saying, if you're really interested, go seek out the TV broadcast of Marty, the original teleplay, because it is very good. It's about a guy who's just kind of sad and lives with his mom, and he's kind of a loser.
I think that would really hit home for a lot of those boys in the group chat.
Yeah, you guys should watch Marty. It's about all of you. Nah, it's literally, yeah, no, it is about a guy. Yeah, it's about an Italian guy who lives with his mother. He's married. He's unmarried. He's 34. He's good natured. He's socially awkward. He only has 300 followers. It's weird. He reads a lot. He's on 8chan a lot. He's posted a lot.
Wait, so what did you say this movie was called? Joshua?
It's called Marty. Marty.
Got it.
Fucking roasted once again, bro. I don't know if he listens to the podcast, but this motherfucker's been catching strays every fucking week. It's so funny. We had Kevin on. He was talking shit about, or we were talking about Vice, you know, Vice Apologist, and I was like, you know, I for one think he's had it too good for too long, you know. And I definitely don't think he's listened, because I feel like he would have told me something by now. But yeah, you know, Josh. Yeah, you're on the fucking list, bro. There's a target on your back for some reason. No reason. I don't know why, man. You've been really nice to me. But hey, the guests want to attack you, so I'm going to do it too, you know?
You said a lot of nasty things about Peg.
Yeah, the number one Peg enjoyer is here, motherfucker. Psych, movie two is actually both of the... movie two is actually the Matrix Revolutions movie or whatever. Then the last Matrix, both of the movies with Peg in them. I don't know.
Sam Peckinpah wishes he could have made Glass Onion, Knives Out mystery.
Oh, I got it. Okay, I got it. Sam Peckinpah.
Oh, there you go.
Okay,
now we're cooking.
There we go. Okay, it was worth it. I'll edit all that other shit out, but it was worth it to get to here. But yeah, with that said, that wraps up the first half of our double feature. And please, everyone, join us on the second half, where we'll be talking 1969's Butch Cassidy and the Sundance Kid, starring probably just the most charismatic men in the world. I want to build a time machine and marry both of them.
I actually, if we had our cameras on right now, viewers would know that I actually look just like Robert Redford in that movie. So yeah. That's cool.
I actually look... like half of my face looks like Robert Redford and the other half of my face looks like Colin. I was in an accident. I hide in the shadows. But anyways, everyone, join us. Join us on the second half. Welcome back to Movie Flex. That's right, it's Movie Flex. Part two of today's double feature, 1969's Butch Cassidy and the Sundance Kid, directed by George Roy Hill, written by William Goldman. I think this is the first Goldman written film we've done. He's widely considered to be the GOAT screenwriter, but again, 5 stars. Two of just the most absolute, you know, best actors in the world. I love both of these guys' work, like, in general. Like, man, I don't know. Talk about fucking movie stars. But yeah, 5 stars for me. Lob, Matt, what'd you think?
I love this movie. I saw this movie a long time ago for the first time. Like, I think it was, like, 19. That's a long time ago. Yeah, it's terrible. But, yeah, so I saw this movie when I was like 19. I think it was on AFI's. I always talk about this list. It was like AFI's top 100 movies. Mm-hmm. It was like 100 years, 100 movies top list or whatever. And this is on the list. It's pretty high up too. I think it's like breaks through the 50s. And so I was like going through that list and I was like watching some movies. And I came across this one and I loved it. I hadn't seen that many Westerns like at that point in my life. And, it's 5 stars for me. It's just an amazing movie about a couple bros, you know,
couple of guys hanging out. It's the opposite of, Banshees of Inisherin. It's what if two guys wanted to be friends?
Yeah.
But the world didn't want them to be.
Yeah, but the world was cruel.
Yeah, this is 5 stars. Oh, sorry. Go ahead.
Oh, no, I was saying, I was literally about to say laugh.
Yeah, this is definitely a 5-star for me, too. This is like this and Unforgiven and the Lonesome Dove TV miniseries were all Westerns my dad really likes and showed to me as a kid. And I liked them at the time, but like I kind of didn't really get them, I don't think. I watched it again when I got back into into Westerns really for the first time a few years ago. And it's like, I think this is like, it's probably not as like deep of a movie as The Wild Bunch, but I think this is like one of the most entertaining movies ever made. It's just like, I could watch this every day. It's so like, just, you know, the dialogue is so snappy and fun. And like the two leads are just like the most charismatic guys ever. And it's such a great looking movie. It's so energetic and like,
yeah. What two better guys perfect to hang out with, you know?
Yeah. I mean, I know this is one of the highest grossing Westerns ever, like adjusted for inflation or something. And like a really beloved movie, but I actually feel like on like film Twitter, it's kind of under discussed. Like I know people like it, but like, you know, it's like, I think this is like a like Raiders of the Lost Ark level, like perfect adventure movie to me. And like, people should talk about it more.
Definitely. Yeah. And it's also like, I think that was interesting that what you said. You said it's like not as deep because, like, I think maybe not as deep on a philosophical, like, in terms of its like entire philosophy. But I do think, like, personally, it's a really deep. It's like very simple though, right? Like, it's very deep but very simple, which is like these two guys who are like, you watch the entire movie and you're kind of rooting for them, and you see kind of like the ledge, you know, come out from under them. And it is like this kind of nihilistic view of like, this was how this movie, like this movie's ending is how it was always going to end, right? And it's like, because these guys don't know anything. And like that later scene when she's talking about like, oh, we could buy a farm, and he's like, I don't know how to farm, I can't be a farmer, you know, like they're just like, I
gotta literally be a young man to ranch.
Can't be anything else, because like the world is like, because I'm good at this one specific thing, and it's like this one specific thing is like going to get them killed, you know? And I just think it's like really kind of deep on that personal level, more so than like any wide sweeping statements about,
yeah,
you know, like the Western genre or, you know, like nihilism or anything like that.
I think it's definitely like a better movie for this, but I guess just like in terms of like depth, and I really do not mean this as an insult, because like these are both like perfect movies to me, but Butch and Sundance kind of doesn't like dig into like, you know, the realities of being like a violent outlaw as much. Like, you know, it's like they kill a few people, I mean they kill a lot of people at the end, but I think they only kill one guy when they're doing robberies. The only guy they kill during those, I think, is in the opening scene where it's like shown as like a movie, basically, like where it's like sepia toned, and like, so it's like there's kind of this remove from the like violent reality of being, you know, a cowboy bandit, which is like, you know, perfect for this movie because it is kind of like a fun adventure cowboy movie until it's not. But I think the Wild Bunch has like more to say about like violence and the state of the world, but like that's not a flaw of this movie, that's just kind of in comparison to
What's really interesting is like in the movie, Butch, right, he like tells him when they try to go on the straight and narrow and become like guards for the banks or whatever, for the payroll, Butch tells him he's never killed a man. Right, he's like, I've never killed a man. And what I found interesting is it kind of reminds me of the idea in like Unforgiven when what's Gene Hackman's
Little Bill,
yeah, when Little Bill is like talking to English Bob or British Bob or whatever his name is, and he's like, this guy's never done any of this, like he just kind of posts off of his name, right? And it's very interesting because like a lot of these guys, and Deadwood kind of hints on this too, a lot of these guys probably never saw actual combat of any type, but they just like had these legends around their names, like, oh, he's the fastest gun and whatever, so everyone was afraid. Like even in the opening scene where they're gambling and the guy accuses Sundance of cheating, and he's like, let's go Sundance, he's like, oh, you're the Sundance kid, and he's like, oh yeah, like, no, I don't want to mess with you, you'd kill me, right?
I think that guy is Sam Elliott, actually. He just doesn't have a mustache yet. Yeah.
Oh, wow. Interesting. Yeah. Okay. Yeah. That actually makes a lot of sense. Cause I was like, it is him. Yeah. That is, you're right. Yeah. Cause I was like, man, that guy fucking looks familiar, but there's something about, you know, I didn't realize who that really was, but yeah, you're right. Sam Elliott.
Sorry. Sorry to interrupt.
No, it's all good. That's awesome. I didn't know that. But yeah, it's funny. Cause like in that opening scene, he kind of coasts by on his name and like, you see that he's skilled, but you don't know if he could like, if push comes to shove, because like you said, Law, we hadn't seen anyone be killed in that at that point. And he, like, you know, that guy doesn't know either. Like, he hasn't met these guys ever, you know. So like, he just kind of assumes that Sundance is like a killer. And yeah. It's really interesting because, like, you know, they do kind of coast by on their names, and then like their luck just ends up running out. They rob the wrong person too many times, and it, you know, like I said, it's a movie about like these guys running ahead and just not seeing the ground just absolutely give way underneath them.
It's I might be getting ahead of myself here in terms of the movie, where it's at in the movie, but you brought up the scene where they, you know, Butch says, "I've never killed anybody." I thought I was kind of struck by, like, compared to the rest of the violence in this movie, especially the violence in that scene where they, you know, shoot the six or seven bandits or whatever, is like really kind of Peckinpah-esque in like the slow motion and the screaming and stuff. Like, it's really horrific compared to like everything else in this movie. And that's when they, like, they're trying to go straight. It's like there's really is just like nowhere to go. Like, you try to join the civilized world and you know, like, end up massacring a bunch of people. Like,
yeah. Mm-hmm. And that realization comes, you know, because like, it's also like, it's really interesting because Butch says in the movie, he's like, if that guy would pay me to stop robbing him half of what he's paying these guys to catch us, then like, I would stop robbing him, right? Like, which is like the, you know, it's like the sensible thing, right? But like, again, it kind of means that the Western, right, like the old West, right, in America at the time, was just these kind of like vindictive, like evil people against evil people, right? Like he's not trying to stop the train robberies. He's trying to send a message to anyone who would possibly rob a train that, like,
yeah,
if you try and rob me, you will die this gruesome death.
Yeah, yeah. I was gonna say, like, to me, like, yeah, it's not so much like everyone is evil, it's like there is no good and evil, right? Like, there is no, it's all just fucking an illusion. But yeah, I was just gonna say, like, this is like the funniest, because Matt has a funny joke about what happens at the end, but like, you know, it like, you know, obviously they die or whatever, but like, spoiler alert, it's technically a tragedy, right? Because they never learn to like adjust to the new like moral sphere that they're, you know, the world that they're living in, right? Like, they're never able to adjust to the new world. They keep doing their same things and eventually it catches up to them. So ultimately, like, it is a tragedy, but it's the funnest fucking tragedy I've ever watched in my life.
Mm-hmm.
That's what I love about it. And that's a huge, like, huge bit of irony. And I think, yeah, like all great films have a touch of irony, at least, you know?
I think after like the first screenings of it, George Roy Hill was like kind of upset at how like funny people thought it was, because he was like, they laughed at my tragedy. Like, it really is.
Yeah.
I mean, it is. It really has such a great tone where it's like there really is this air of like melancholy over the whole thing. And like, you know, it's going to end badly. But like, it's really funny. And like, it's just fun to hang out with these characters.
Yeah.
Yeah, for sure. I mean, the guy, the recurring guy who won't open the railway car is a very so funny fucking character.
Funny, dude.
Woodcock.
Oh, hey, you got to respect me more than to think that I'll fall for that. yeah. What were you saying?
I was just saying that, like, that guy showing back up like in a sling, it's like very Looney Tunes-esque. Like,
when they blow up the car the second time, the like cut where they put so much dynamite on it, and they're like, it cuts, like, it blows up like earlier than you think it would. It cuts and then just like it explodes everywhere. That's so funny to me.
Yeah.
Think you used up dynamite there, Butch.
And he's like still alive and he's just like covered in soot or whatever. Yeah, it's so funny. But I was gonna say, like, this one feels more like kind of Bonnie and Clyde-ish, right? It feels more of like that new Hollywood era.
Yeah.
Like, or, as I said, like, Peckinpah was more of just like a you know, I know I'm the old guy at the party. Hey, don't mind me. I'm just gonna fucking you know, just gonna blow my brains out in front of everyone. I'm just gonna little bill myself from fucking Boogie Nights or whatever. myself in front of everyone. But yeah, whereas this feels more like a you know, they all died, but weren't they like really cool though?
Yeah. It's very interesting. Yeah, that kind of like you said, it's a tragedy, but it's like the most fun tragedy, right? Because it's like, this is pretty cool. It's like, oh, they're bros, you know, like the ending I was just thinking, like, oh, they're just bros, you know, like whatever. So who cares?
I think you could, if I was going to like show somebody a Western to like ease them into the genre, it would probably be this, because it's just like it feels not necessarily modern in every way, but it's so like, it's like the Wild Bunch, you kind of need like, I probably wouldn't just like show the Wild Bunch to somebody who like is just used to watching, like, you know, just like a normal person. Like, I don't know if they would love that.
A Tinder date or whatever.
Yeah. Hey, you want to come over and watch Bring Me the Head of Alfredo Garcia, babe?
You're like, oh, hey, Discord kitten. I know you're coming into town next week. Do you want to watch The Getaway? It's a Peckinpah.
The Getaway is actually, I mean,
it's
more,
goated,
more,
right? It's
more romantic than some Peckinpah.
Well, I mean, it's got Steve McQueen, so the girls are going to love that, you know? I don't say that but in a sexist way.
You show her the Wild Bunch, and she's like, who are these fucked up little freaks just like being assholes to each other? It's like Ernest Borgnine.
That's me and the boys, babe. Don't you get it?
Yeah. You're like, she's that's a good chat.
She's like, why the fuck are they just gross and like wanting to kill each other all the time? And like, just everyone's just dying. She's like, what the fuck is going on?
You're like, no, the Wild Bunch is the group chat. You're the hot Latina. And she's like, I'm from fucking Wisconsin. Like, what are you talking about? You're like, no, you're the beauty. You're the lady. You know, I don't know, trying to make it romantic or whatever. I'm just saying, because even I spoon over Steve McQueen, you know, he's a very handsome man.
He's a cool guy in that movie. I really love the bit where they're on the train or whatever, and the guy was like trying to, it's been a while since I've seen it. He tried to break into Steve McQueen's locker or something, but he left a bunch of scratches. And Steve McQueen like sits down next to him. He's like, hey, next time you try to pick a lock, don't leave any scratches. And he just like elbows him in the throat so hard. It's awesome.
He was so cool, man. Oh, fuck. He was the best.
I feel like Tarantino's gotta love this movie with, because Once Upon a Time in Hollywood is also like melancholy buddy end of an era movie, and I think it's set in 1969, which, you know, this movie came out like, I don't know if, yeah, I'm sure he's talked about it somewhere, but like, I feel like this is a big influence on that. This, you know, if there wasn't already a movie called Once Upon a Time in the West,
yeah. Oh, that's an amazing movie too. That's also one of my favorite westerns. Love that movie.
Yeah, this movie made for $6 million, box office $102 million North American.
Jesus, yeah. that was a lot of money back then, especially.
Oh yeah. Yeah, huge.
It's, I mean, it's got a film festival named after it. You know, it's pretty goated movie. It's awesome.
Oh yeah, the Butch Cassidy.
Whatever.
I don't think it's right that we're naming film festivals after criminals, but that's just me.
I was gonna say one scene that made me laugh so fucking hard, like while watching it, because like this is my first rewatch in like almost 10 years, and it's like the raindrops keep falling on my head is a very funny fucking stupid scene where Butch is like riding Edda around on a bicycle. I'm like, what the fuck are we watching?
He's just being silly.
It was a nice nod to Spider-Man 2 there, Mr. Roy Hill.
Yeah, I was like, what the hell is going on?
That scene is really, like, it's just kind of like pure joy. It's so like, I mean, it's so weird that this movie is about like murderous outlaws, but like that scene, like it's just really kind of a sweet, like, not innocent movie, but like,
yeah,
there's stuff like that in it that's like, I mean, imagine Peckinpah watching that scene.
Go back in time to show this to Peckinpah to immediately kill him.
Yeah, this is like he saw the dailies, and this is what coming. Yeah, no, and we should say Catherine Ross plays the
Edda Place. Finally,
yeah, Edda Place. Yeah, Catherine Ross from The Graduate.
I really love how.
Oh, I knew I recognized.
Oh, that's a good call. Yeah,
yeah, she's the girl. Yeah,
I really like how the like in the Wild Bunch, they're like the characters are like actually like, you know, the Gorch brothers and stuff especially are like actually. I don't like that they're misogynistic. I would phrase that poorly. In the Wild Bunch, they're misogynistic. And in this movie, like, Sundance acts like he's, like, you know, he kind of, like, tells her, like, you know, you got to do what I say or whatever. But, like, they're actually, like, kind of really deferential to her. Like, I've really, one of my favorite scenes in the movie is when at the end, when she realizes they're never going to change and they're going to die down here. Yeah. She says, like, really, it's a really quiet conversation between all three of them. Like, there's, like, she's going to go back home. And, like, they don't say, she doesn't say, because you guys are going to get killed soon. But like it's understood, and they're both just like the Paul Newman's line read where Sundance tells him like, "Hey, I'm just gonna go back home. Is that okay?" And he's just like, "Whatever she wants." It's like so like sweet and like it's just such a sad little sweet scene. It's so good.
Yeah, the final scene as well is like amazing, and I was telling Steven it was annoying me, and I still haven't been able to figure it out. But there was a TV show, and one of the jokes was like they were talking about Butch Cassidy and the Sundance Kid. He's like, "Yeah, we're gonna go out like Butch Cassidy and the Sundance Kid," and they're like, "What?" He's like, "They died at the end." He's like, "No, they didn't."
Yeah.
He's like, "Yeah, they did. Like, they just got shot." And he's just like, "No, they didn't. We never saw them get shot." He's like, "What happened? They lined up a bunch of guys to shoot him, and you heard a bunch of gunshots at the end." He goes, "They jumped over the bullets." Like, what are you talking about? I can't remember where that was from, but I was thinking about that when I, like, the entire time I was watching it. And I was just like, I looked it up. I looked it up on TV Tropes. I looked it up whenever I couldn't find what it's from. So shout out to whatever that was that is stuck in the back of my mind. But yeah, I mean, that ending is like such an incredible ending that I think like kind of elevates the movie, like not to say that the rest of the movie isn't up to the ending, but like that's one that sticks with people. You know what I mean? Like that freeze frame ending.
Yeah. It's so good that the freeze frame pulls back like to see the whole scene too. But none of the people who killed them are in it. Like it's like the legend is preserved. You guys are forgotten.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah, no, and it says a lot about, because, you know, you cast like the most charismatic, good looking guys as like killers, then you're gonna be like, you know, are they really that bad? You know, whereas like in real life, you're like, no, like these people killed people. But that's Hollywood, right? That's the magic of Hollywood.
Terrible people. Yeah, exactly.
I remember reading on Wikipedia, I think a few years ago, that like the real Butch Cassidy, who did not look anything like Paul Newman, I will say, he like claimed that, like, you know, their trademark was that they never killed anybody in robberies, but that is not true apparently. So shout out to the victims of Butch Cassidy and the Sundance Kid.
Yeah, Butch Cassidy died when he was 42.
All the victims, this goes out to you if you're listening.
This is a true crime podcast now.
Who killed Butch Cassidy and the Sundance Kid?
I think,
I don't know, aliens?
I think in real life it's like pretty up in, I don't remember, it's been a few years since I looked this up, but like something like this might have happened, but like maybe they got away. Nobody knows for sure, it sounds like.
Well, it says Butch died at 42 and Sundance died at 41, but at Wikipedia, yeah, it says aliens. What killed them.
Butch Cassidy was a leader of a gang of criminal outlaws known as the Wild Bunch.
Yeah, I was about to say that. Okay. Yeah.
Interesting.
Do you think he got it from the movie?
Yeah, he was a big fan.
Huge fame, Peckinpah.
Man, but yeah, but Butch was, I mean, they were being chased by the Pinkertons, and no one, those guys are not, those are the feds, right? Like those, we don't like,
I think still Pinkertons around. They are. They're technically like a private security company, but they were like, I think they were like, they protected, they did like Secret Service stuff back in the day and stuff. And they're big villains on Deadwood too.
They're the honky tonk CIA. Yeah, that's why I say that. Yeah, because I'm a huge Deadwood fan as well. Yeah.
The Pinkertons are just like ruthless bastards, apparently.
I really love in this movie, especially compared to the Wild Bunch, where the like bounty hunters chasing them are kind of like incompetent and just like greedy. Mm-hmm. Like in this one, you never, like, you only ever see the like lawmen chasing them like from far away. They're like these faceless like specters.
Yeah.
with like the droning horse hooves and stuff. And like they, you know, they talk about them like, yeah, this is Joe LaFleur's. He's the best lawman in the world. This is Lord Baltimore. He can track anybody over anything. Like they're just these like inescapable, like mythic, like specters of death.
Yeah, and you know, really quickly, Matt, you know, shout out to last week's guest Trevor, you know, Kevin Smith expert. But I don't know if you realize this, but in Mallrats, the head security guard's name is LaFleur's, and he wears the white straw hat. Wow. You know, that's when you, so you know, I think, you know, Kevin Smith, that's really like an very metatextual comment on film. Oh my god, I'm gonna kill myself. But no, yeah, Kevin Smith, absolute goblin.
You gotta watch your mouth, or he's gonna own you on Twitter like he did to Brandon and Lance.
Oh my god.
Oh, he's gonna cry. He's gonna fucking cry.
Brandon, I remember that because Brandon, he was like defending Clerks 3 in the group chat or whatever. And then the what's Kevin Smith comes for him. I was like, oh my god. I was like, yeah, Brandon is literally your strongest soldier, sir.
Yeah.
Bro, yeah, that's what he fucked up, you know?
Imagine if Robert Redford came for us after we did this episode.
No, but see that, okay, like, here's the thing. Robert Redford wouldn't come for us, and we've never said anything bad about him, and we never would, because we're all on the same side. Again, you know, but like, Kevin Smith, darkness. Evil.
Mr. You know? Redford, sir, you look really cool in your corduroy jacket in this movie. I kind of want one.
Man, I think you know, he's cool and everything.
On Twitter. Yeah. Like, you fucking piece of shit.
I love 3 Days at the Condor, man. Like, oh man, he's
such a big fan of Captain America: The Winter Soldier.
Okay, well, it's, I mean,
I loved your final performance in Avengers Endgame or whatever.
Yeah, you're better than that hack Marlon Brando, you know. Oh god, oh man, the Pinkertons, not good guys though, you know.
Fucking Pinkertons,
generally not good guys. But yeah, Butch and Sundance, like I said, like I thought Matt would like this one because I remember the raindrop scene. I was like, oh, that's just, you know, a guy being whimsical, you know. I was like, Matt would probably like that. You know, I'm starting to get a sense of what he likes.
Matt likes young men who are whimsical.
Right. Matt likes young whimsical. Yeah, white boys who are sick with it, you know?
Go to it. It's funny that they're like kind of all three of them are in, like, they have like a throuple thing going on.
Yeah. What? Okay. Can you guys
explain them really weird? She like kisses him really weird, and then he kisses her, and then Sundance, he's like, what are you doing? He's like, I'm stealing your woman. He goes, okay, you can have her, and then walks
the take her.
Because legit, it looks like it looks like Paul Newman and The Graduate are together, right? But then we find out, oh, she's actually with Robert Redford. But then, you know, he makes a joke about I'm trying to steal her, and then he goes, oh, I don't care. I legit think he doesn't care, and I legit think he's trying to steal her. But you know what the thing is? Like, I've been where Robert Redford's been. I've been like, if you're like, you're with a girl and your homie's like, you almost steal her, and you're like, yeah, I mean, please take her. Like, honestly, like, you'd be doing me a favor, honestly. Like, I've been trying to find a way out of this Kafka-esque fucking labyrinth.
Ronin mindset right there. Yeah. Yeah. Like Wob always talks about.
I found out there's this thing called Sigma Grindset, so I don't need you anymore.
I don't think it's as dark as that here. Like, they kind of joke about it, but like, I think it's more than just like Paul Newman is like obviously not going to settle down with one person. I don't think. And
he's
like,
depressed, dude.
Just like all really comfortable with each other. It seems like, and like they kind of like fight, they bicker, but like.
I think he likes Etta for Sundance. I don't think he like really likes her like that. You know what I mean?
They're all kind of like I Newman especially, yeah. But like I feel like they're him and Sundance. Like Paul Newman isn't actually as nearly as smart as he thinks he is in this movie. I think where he's like constantly trying to convince himself, like. Well, I think we probably lost him, don't you? And he's always like he never actually believes it. He just wants like somebody else to join his opinion so he can believe it. But like he's always trying to convince himself the situation isn't that bad. We're gonna join the army now. Like that'll work.
Yeah. And it does. We'll just do like stripes.
Yeah.
Yeah. And the guy, it's so funny because that guy, the sheriff guy was like you're,
that, you I love join, that scene.
He's like, you can't join the army. He's like, they'll like kill you. Like you're outlaws. You're two bit outlaws. You'll never be anything but two bit outlaws. And I'm like, they could have joined the army. Like,
I was yeah, like,
I'm the like, army definitely.
The army, I mean, they kill like 100 guys at the end. They would have been incredible assets in the war against the Spanish, I think.
Yeah, I'm like, they could have definitely joined the army. I feel like the army was just like, do you have your own gun? They're like, yeah. They're like, cool, go kill Spanish people.
I mean, like, they should. Yeah, exactly. Yeah, I was gonna say like, if the army doesn't let him join, they should just join the other side. Then
there you go.
That was a thing that you could do back in the day. You could just like go to another country and join the other side.
You literally could. Not even
yeah. I mean, Hemingway fucking fought for Italy yeah. in World War I. Like, the fuck? Why?
Well, you know, at least he wouldn't live to regret that one. You know?
I know. It's like, Italy's a great country. They'll never do anything bad.
You know what's crazy is that the shotgun he used to kill himself, he bought it at Abercrombie & Fitch. Because they used to be like a
shotgun shooting store.
Yeah, it used to be like a hunting store, yeah. And so that's pretty crazy. Just like a fun little fact. Well, I guess it's not that fun. Well, you know, I don't know, maybe. Because I guess if you like imagine him wearing an Abercrombie shirt, that's kind of funny. And then
do you think Hemingway was better at shooting on the move like Sundance was?
Hemingway knew you couldn't shoot a moving target. That's why he did it while sitting down. You know?
This is a very educational podcast.
Yeah.
Sorry.
Learning a lot about literature.
Yeah. Yeah, that's a scene that I like where Sundance is like, can I try again? Like, can I? And he's like, what do you want? Can I move? Yeah, no problem. And he's like, all right, so he moves. And he's like, I'm a better shot at move when I move, which is a very weird skill to have, in my opinion.
He's all about style.
Yeah. I guess he's really good at like doing the quick draw or whatever.
He's like, oh, I need to move and I also need 6 Miller Lights.
Yeah,
he's the drunken master.
He's like the quick and the dead, like one of those guys who just like has his own quirk or whatever. He's just good.
This and Deadwood both. Deadwood, no, I'm not going to spoil anything for anyone who hasn't seen it, but Deadwood, in a much more tragic way, both of them use bicycles as like a symbol of the like,
wow, you know,
civilization.
Yeah,
yeah, I did. Yeah, now that you say that, I do remember. Matt's watched Deadwood as well.
Yeah, I love Deadwood.
So yeah, we both get the bike reference. Yeah, a fucking tragedy that they didn't get to have like. I mean, they did get to have a proper end, I guess, with like the movie, but like they didn't get. They should have had like a fourth season, you know.
I honestly really love the ending of season 3 as it is. Like, if you know, there's loose ends, but like I think it really thematically sums up the whole deal well. But like, yeah, man, it was so good.
Well, yeah,
deserved so much more.
It does, like, yeah, it is kind of good. Like, it's like the kind of literally the Sopranos ending where you just cut it off in the middle where you don't even know it's coming. Like, that's kind of better because I feel like it would have, if it would have continued, like, it might have fallen into like the Game of Thrones trap of like, oh, we have this like whole show based on moral complexity, and then in the last season we're just gonna make it like a hero's journey, you know, thing. And oh, here's the underdog, you know, Jon Snow's Harry Potter, spoiler alert, blah, 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 you know, whatever. And, like, so I think that, yeah, the fact that Deadwood died early it's part of what makes it a perfect show, in my opinion.
Yeah. Yeah, definitely S-tier TV. It's so good.
And also, like, he says a lot of funny insults. Like, I'm not going to say what Al Swearengen says, but, like, you know, I mean, like...
the dialogue on that show is so... it's insane.
I remember, like, when I was in college, like, the rumor was that David Milch wrote that show using iambic pentameter.
And, I don't know. I've heard that he's very... I don't know. I don't know for sure. But yeah. I know he is really, like, you know...
No,
he's a really well-read guy, obviously.
Yeah, well, his mentor was Richard Yates, who is, like, a... fucking huge like figure in like American literature, 20th century. He wrote a book called Revolutionary Road, They made a movie out of it in the 2000s with like Leonardo DiCaprio and Kate Winslet. It wasn't good. The movie sucks, but the book's amazing. I've seen the movie. I've read the book. Book is amazing. Movie is trash.
Okay, I got an idea. I've been cooking up in the lab over here. This is the perfect TV auteur. Hear me out. Larry David Milch.
Okay, let's fucking go. Okay.
The perfect show. What is the deal with Hoopleheads and Cocksuckers? Am I right?
Yeah. Oh, man. You're like, oh, this guy, like, drinks all day. You're like, oh, that's fucking cool. You're like, hold up. Let me let him cook.
That's right. I mean, he's a good guy deep down. You just got to wait a while to find his heart of gold.
Yeah. It's beyond good or bad, but he is the right man for the right time, right? Like,
that's right.
Hey, he doesn't like guns. He's a nice guy.
He doesn't like Pinkertons. He doesn't like guns. You know,
he's not that racist. Like compared,
he's only really racist when it like suits his ends. He has no ill will. He's just kind of evil sometimes.
Yeah,
he can be straight up woke, right? Like even being woke one time is like good for that time period.
There you go.
He's generally like I'm like yeah, you know, like. Again, like you don't have to like model yourself after these people. You don't have to be like, yeah, I'm gonna like that's my inspiration. I'm gonna be that person.
I'm gonna model myself after Dan though.
Dan is cool. Dan's got a good except rock, for some of the murders, he's got a good heart.
Yeah.
The fact that you could like root for these people is different, you know?
It's like a puppy. It's like a puppy with a shotgun.
Yeah. You're like, I know I shouldn't be this person, but it's good that I want them to win.
Oh yeah, I mean, Al is like pretty much by like season two. I mean, he's not like quote unquote the good guy, but like he's definitely like evil in the first season. But he like becomes kind of a good guy, you know, quote unquote by the end of the show. Yeah. It's kind of cool that there's like a prestige TV show that's like it's not like oh a good man turning evil like you know. Not that that's what Breaking Bad is about, but it's not like, you know, the Breaking Bad arc or whatever. It's like a kind of evil guy, like learning to, you know, be part of a community and be a good guy. And like,
final thoughts on Sunday.
Oh, yeah.
Why don't you guys go first?
Go ahead, Bob.
Oh, yeah, this is, one of my favorite movies. I think it's, you know, just super, super entertaining, really just strikes the perfect tone. It's like, it's just perfect entertainment. Like, I actually think the shootouts in this aren't like as like revolution or the big shootout at the end is pretty much the only one. Mm. But, I wanted to mention this before we end, but like the shootout in this is like so well-directed and energetic and stuff. And like, it's so good. Like, it's just like a perfect, like action adventure movie to me. I think, you know, obviously it's been really heavily praised over the years, but like people on Twitter should talk about it more because that's what really counts is what the losers on Twitter think.
Yeah, well, we have a lot of thoughts about losers on Twitter, but Matt, what are your final thoughts on this movie?
Yeah, I loved it. Like I said, 5 stars. Like we said, it's a very fun kind of cowboy adventure until it's not, where the reality kind of suddenly comes crashing in that this was how it was always going to end. And, you know, like I said, one of the great film endings of all time, which is just kind of like everyone, you know, that's one of the ways that you get people to walk away and talk about your movie and remember it, you know, for a long time, yeah. I think. But yeah, it's an incredible film.
Yeah. It's how you get people coming back, you know, and shit. And, but yeah, no,
it's like Sundance too.
Yeah, well, I'm fucking waiting for the sequel, bro. Like,
I think there is like a prequel show or something. Maybe it's like the early years or something. It does not have Newman and Redford in it.
It's not so Butch in the Sundance Toddler. It's a prequel.
Butch Cassidy and the Sundance Kids.
Sundance babies.
Yeah.
But yeah, my final thoughts. You know, I mean, it's fun. Like, you're gonna love it. It's the best. It's amazing. It's super fun. If you haven't watched it, watch it. If you've watched it, watch it again. Like I said, funnest tragedy you'll ever watch. But with that, I think that wraps it up for the double feature for today. But Lob, now, you know, I want to give you a little bit of an open, you know, forum. You had a tweet about there was like four movies. It was like there were
four movies that
you were like, don't, you're not gonna fool me again, Hollywood.
It was I saw Infinity Pool last Friday. So it was that, The Menu, Triangle of Sadness. That's that one I have not seen, full disclosure, but I'm not planning to. I don't think I would like it. And Glass Onion. Which you know, I had a decent enough time with Glass Onion. I don't think Infinity Pool is terrible or anything. And The Menu, don't get me started on, but like,
it's very really, bad. You're allowed to say it.
Yeah.
I fucking hate
I'm,
it.
Free space.
I'm just,
yeah, this is the safe space.
I'm just like sick of the Hollywood elites making movies about like, oh man, aren't rich people bad? Like, you know, like, I'm just sick of these like toothless, you know, quote unquote, like satires being like, you know, oh, you know, like, I don't know. I'm just like this specific kind of movie about like, man, aren't rich people bad? Ah, too bad. There's, you know, you can watch the movie, but don't really do anything about this, please. Like,
it's because it's fucking rich people making the movie.
Yeah.
Sucks.
Yeah. It's like, it's like one of those things where it's like how. Yeah. Cause it's like, you're culpable like as well. Right. Like, and it's these things where it's like you critiquing that, it, like you said, it's toothless, because if it wasn't toothless, like, it would be buried, it wouldn't be wide released.
Yeah,
you know what I mean? So like, yeah, I knew one of the worst things about, I call The Menu the fucking Excel spreadsheet, the movie, because it's like hits every fucking bullet point on the way, and I'm like, I knew, like, I saw the trailer and I knew what it'd be like, and then everyone was like, oh, it's a fun 3-star movie, and I'm like, it's not a 3-star movie, guy. I don't know where
it's like, it's fine for stupid that. It's fine for a movie to be stupid and hypocritical, I think, but like, it's got to at least be fun, and it doesn't have the juice. Like, it
doesn't even have that. Yeah,
yeah. And people got like so mad at me about this tweet. Like, I mean, it wasn't nearly as bad as like, you know, a certain other unnamed movie from last year, as far as fan reaction, but like people, I got a lot of people saying, oh, so you hate having fun at the movies, huh? Like, no, these movies would be fine if they actually were fun. Like,
yeah, no, if there's one thing that I know about Lob, it's that he hates having fun.
I hate fun, man.
He's surely not the most whimsical man I've ever met in my life.
A young man full of whimsy. Yeah, no, but I agree. I mean, I thought that was a very good tweet. I really liked it. I haven't seen Triangle of Sadness. I actually liked Infinity Pool a lot more than most people, I think. But yeah, I had some friends say that Triangle of Sadness was actually pretty good. But yeah, no, the menu was bad. And then Glass Onion, though, I think was also a movie that I was very disappointed, because I actually really liked Knives Out, because I thought Knives Out was pretty fun and inventive. Mm-hmm. But I think Glass Onion, and I've said this a couple times, does this thing where it's like, it gets, so the flashback is way too long.
Yeah, definitely.
Like, it's way too long. Mm-hmm. It's the worst accent I've ever fucking heard in my life. I don't care what people said. That's a terrible Southern accent. Like, it's not, yeah, it's spoilers for Glass Onion, I guess, but it's not Daniel Craig's Southern accent. It's a very sudden Southern accent that's awful. It's terrible. Take it from a Southern boy. It's terrible. And yeah, I just don't like the
movies.
I think the reveal in it, like, is pretty lame. And also, like you said, yeah, like you said, Lob, it's kind of like a toothless critique of like, rich people are bad, and you know what? You should smash things about it. It's like, okay. I guess
they should have done the Once Upon a Time in Hollywood ending.
they should have been
it's Once Upon a Time in Hollywood meets you know, the Looney Tunes cartoon where it's like Donald Duck, but or it's like Daffy Duck, but then it's like the artist drawing, you know, like,
mm-hmm.
You know that one? Yeah, but it's like that. But then, like, we zoom out, like, at the end of the movie, we zoom out and we see, like, Ryan Johnson, like, typing at his computer. And he's like, and rich people are bad, dot, dot, dot. enter, you know?
Save. Thank you, Ryan.
And then, like, he gets, and then, like, dark monsters come out of the ether and, like, drag him away. And then he gets, you know, put into a
game. It's the ending of Unfriended, but it's with Ryan Johnson. It turns into fucking
heavy metal. Yeah. I will say, it's Ryan was running it.
Closing his laptop. That's what he fucks.
I like The Last Jedi. I kind of like The First Knives Out. But Ryan was losing me with Glass Onion. I feel like he's like doubling down on his worst impulses. No, but his new show is pretty good. I've only seen the first two episodes, but I'm liking that a lot so far.
Yeah, I've seen the first episode. Matt's seen the first four. We both three. We both like three. But yeah, we both like Poker Face. We both like The Last Jedi.
I like Knives Out.
I mean, it's okay. I like
I
it.
I really
it's
like
fine.
Knives Out. Yeah.
It's fine.
I like but that like, more. Than, I like that movie more than most people, I would say. And then I hated Glass Onion.
I think deep down he is better at making TV. So the the Peg Knives Out Apple TV show is really going to go hard, you know.
Yeah. Hell yeah.
Yeah. Do you have any like Peg stuff you want to talk about? Because like you know, I know you're like you're the forefather of the Peg movement. You know, not like getting like Peg from Glass Onion.
Any Peg stuff? Not really, just, you know, I appreciate my strong, you know, Peg lieutenants who are keeping the Peg movement going. Shout out to you guys. And, you know, I don't appreciate what Joshua has been saying, but that's neither here nor there. And
he's getting bro.
Yeah, Joshua's had it too good for too long.
Joshua, you heard it on the podcast first. If Wob sees you in the streets, it's fucking over for you.
That's right.
The fact that Josh has not messaged me up until now about anything, like we messaged, but he hasn't texted me about anything anyone said on the podcast. So that proves to me he's not listening, because he would have a lot to say if he was listening.
Yeah, well, Joshua will look you straight in the eye and tell you the other Southern accent, not Daniel Craig's, and Glass Onion is good because he's blinded by love. So
yeah,
that's just fucked up. Well, thanks for having me. You know, it was great to be on.
Again, thanks, Lob. Matt, yeah, thanks, again, Lob. Thanks as always. If you've stuck with us this far into the podcast, ladies and gentlemen, well, you're going to get another fucking heater ass episode next week. So thank you. Good night.